Déjame ver. Tengo el agua, sal, ya tengo el aceite, tengo la harina, me falta la levadura y tengo que buscar las uvas. Ah, hola. No, no estoy en el programa de mi hermana, ni vamos a hacer recetas como tal hoy, pero hoy vamos a hablar un poquito sobre aspectos de la liturgia que tienen que ver con el bautismo y con la cena. Le tengo varios spoilers. En nuestra primera entrevista que hacemos para Ecoteofem, también va a ser un poquito más largo del usual por ser una entrevista, pero también esta entrevista a la persona que yo entrevisto habla inglés y yo español, así que es una entrevista bilingüe. Si quieren disfrutar mejor de ella, les invito a que entonces busquen la entrevista en YouTube para que puedan entonces leer los subtítulos si hay alguna parte que no logran entender bien. Saludos, gracia y paz. Les habla Kelmadis Pérez para otro episodio de Ecoteofem. Y este episodio es especial, como podrán ver. Y hoy vamos a estar hablando un poco sobre liturgia. Y para esta ocasión especial, me está acompañando la reverenda doctora Catherine González González, que nos recibe en su casa. Así que le agradecemos que nos reciba y nos permita compartir en esta ocasión especial. Así que gracias, Catherine.
Gracias.
Yo voy a estar hablando en español. Catherine nos va a estar acompañando entonces en inglés. Así que va a ser una conversación también un poco más interesante en ese sentido y diferente a lo que regularmente hacemos. Así que recapitulando un poquito, en el episodio que grabé sobre ecofeminismo, una de las cosas que yo decía que el ecofeminismo hacía era hablar, denunciar las injusticias del patriarcado, del sistema capitalista que consume más que producir, también las opresiones que recibimos las mujeres y el medio ambiente, pero también cómo el ecofeminismo aporta soluciones a estas cuatro situaciones, al patriarcado, al modelo económico, a las situaciones de las mujeres y del medio ambiente. Entonces, ¿por qué traigo el resumen? Porque dentro del aspecto de la liturgia también queremos hablar un poco sobre quizás el ecofeminismo o de la parte de ecología o feminismo, cómo aportamos o nos acompañamos en ese aspecto. Así que la primera pregunta, ¿qué es liturgia?
Technically, it's the forms of worship in the life of the church.
La forma de adorar en la vida de la iglesia y algo más que nos quiera aportar.
Sometimes liturgies are very formal, so that there is a stated way of doing everything. There may be prayers already written that are to be said on every occasion. Others have no formality, except they have a very strict way of being informal.
Sí, he visto de todo.
Because liturgy is an event that has both leadership and the congregation. And there have to be cues. So in the oldest liturgies, the way you begin is, "The Lord be with you." And at that point, the people respond, "And also with you." And then you go on. But I've had faculty members who wanted to quiet a class and said, "The Lord be with you." And it was simply a way of saying, "Shut up," which is a misuse of liturgy. But it means you know the liturgy. So you know that when they do this, this is what we do next. It becomes a graceful way of moving from one part of the liturgy to another. So that just even the way you announce a hymn is a liturgy. It lets people know what's next and what to do, so they aren't left wondering, "Am I supposed to be seated? Am I supposed to stand? Am I supposed to kneel? What's supposed to happen next?" And the way the prayers, the way a liturgy is constructed, it leaves people aware of how they can participate. And I think that's the most important thing. And good liturgy is a good response, so that people aren't trying to figure out what do I do next. Either the leadership or the people are not wondering what to do next. And yet it's spontaneous.
Sí. Esa parte de saber en dónde estoy, qué viene, cómo comportarme en esta
That's
parte
right.
del culto.
So that the whole group can act as one. It's choreographed, but it's a sacred dance.
Sí, sí.
That's
Sí. Gracias. Entonces, los otros días estábamos hablando y le comentaba eso de entonces cómo podemos incluir aspectos ecofeministas dentro de la liturgia. Y me contestó, bueno, yo sé cómo hacer el eco y el feminismo, pero quizás no el ecofeminismo, pero y podemos empezar por ahí, cómo introducir aspectos de la ecología en la liturgia o del feminismo y quizás salgamos con algo nuevo.
I remember meeting with a group of women, Presbyterian women, at a big summer conference. And one of the issues was why so few women had been elected as elders in the church. And what the male pastors were saying is many of them had been asked to be nominated, that they were asked them, and they said no, they didn't want to be. And one of the things was they couldn't imagine. We at that point we served communion with the trays and the little cups passed down the aisle, and the elders were the ones who took them down. And they said, "I don't know what to wear. Should I wear a hat? I mean, this is back in the 50s, 60s. Should I wear a hat? If I could wear a choir robe, I'd be all right. But I don't know what do I wear a suit? Do I wear a black suit?" In other words, there was within the church, there was a dress code for the pastors. And women didn't know what to do if they got in the roles that men were in. And it was a time when dress was important. So if a male pastor wore a three-piece black suit, did you have to go out and buy a black suit? I mean, what did you do? I mean, so I mean this that was one of the things that was there. So that women have gotten past that because the church has gotten past that. The church is no longer as formal. So the issue of what to wear is much less important. But the other thing was they said, I would just feel so self-conscious carrying the trays down. And I said, at home, who is the one who serves the little trays when people are seated? And they said, well, that's different. This is church. I said, it's the only time men do that. So that the question of how do you understand that the role that women have played is a hospitable one in the home. And in the church, that is also a hospitable act. And they ought to be able to feel the same way they're doing it in church that they do at home. And that was a big issue. Because once you got in church, everything changed. It was no longer hospitality, it was no longer serving, it was communion. I mean, and that was just very important. One issue was the women did not want to be elected elders if their husbands had never been elected elders. So then you ask, does your husband go to church all the time? Well, no, he's not particularly interested. Well, then why on earth do you want him an elder? I mean, this, you know, the, but there was all this underlying mythology, but and then one that was very interesting. The men can be elders. We tell them what to say. I mean, this, and then the last one, which I think still is important. They were saying a lot of the men wouldn't come to church unless they had a role in the church. But the women will come to church anyway.
Anyway, see.
Okay, that means that the fact that you had a male pastor and male elders really meant that a man who simply sat in the pew, that was a feminine role. I mean, to be just a lay person was a feminine role. And I think we invented ushers in order to have jobs for
Wait.
men. But that sense of my husband ought to be an elder before him, I would consider being an elder. This, even if he is not the least bit interested in the church. I mean, there are just all sorts of strange things that go on with communion in particular, but baptism, there were people who actually asked if the woman is a pastor and she baptizes a child, that may be at infant baptism, is that a valid baptism? I mean, there are all sorts of strange things that go on, but I think we're past a lot of that, but not totally.
No, todavía quedan
Yeah,
rastros
and
de
the
eso.
issue for married women, I think, is very much some of the question of should I be an elder if my husband hasn't been an elder? Should I, all sorts of things. But that was a revelation to me, that conference, because I asked, there were about, 80 or 90 women there. And I said, how many of you are elders? This was 1970, as a matter of fact, I know exactly. It's 1970. Women had been ordained elders since the 30s in the Northern Church, which is where it was. And I said, how many have you been asked to be elders and have refused? And it was more than half. And that's when I said, why? And that's when we got into this fascinating discussion. But my father was an elder and very interested. My mother went to church because it was the thing to do, but usually sorted her purse during the long prayers. I don't think she would want to be an elder. So it was, but that sense was just very interesting. It's,
Entonces, ya habiendo quizás superado algunas de estas situaciones de las mujeres dentro de la iglesia, aunque por ejemplo en Puerto Rico todavía, por ejemplo, si una va a tener alguna participación en el culto, una de las cosas que te dicen, no te puedes subir al altar en pantalones. O
Ah, yes.
sea, que todavía ese asunto, por ejemplo, de la vestimenta a veces existe. Ese, y quizás no están tan pendientes a qué se pone el diácono o el anciano o el pastor, pero en el caso de las mujeres, sí. Todavía ese monitoreo de la vestimenta, de cómo nos sentamos, de eso todavía, y en Puerto Rico se da
Well,
mucho.
there's just a long history of dress being extremely important if you are going to determine roles. A book that made an enormous impression on me, it was written back in the 50s. He was a Tunisian Jew before the civil wars, before the wars of independence, but they were going to come. He was a Tunisian Jew, which meant that the Arabs thought of him more like the French than like themselves. The French thought of him more like the Arabs than like themselves.
Oh, wow.
So, what he wrote a book called The Colonizer and the Colonized. And one of the things he says in there are many things, but one of the things he says is that there was a great emphasis on the Arabs keeping traditional dress. Because if you're going to figure out how do I relate to this person, you're French. How do I relate to this person? You need to know at least 50 feet away. He said it will be impossible for French Quebec to have the same kind of civil war because you don't, they dress alike. I mean, there may be a few rural customs or something, but they dress alike, just like the British, the English, Canadians. And if you go in and sit on a bus and somebody comes down and sits next to you and you have no idea how to respond until they open their mouth and I mean that doesn't it, your categories are gone. It just doesn't work. And the same thing with when you want to keep the roles of men and women separate, you want to make sure that the dress is separate. So you can tell. And these days you can't always tell even 10 feet away, but you need to make sure at a distance so that you are prepared emotionally to encounter them. And you have all your, either as a colonizer, as a colonized, you know how to respond in this situation. And I think there are churches that want to maintain that.
Sí. Y en algunas se ven más que en otras
Oh,
todavía
yeah.
esa marcada diferencia. Algún día yo hablaré, aparte de mi asunto con la ropa, y porque yo prefiero usar pantalones, por ejemplo,
Yeah.
pero en la iglesia donde yo me congrego como tal, no hay problema con eso.
No.
Las personas pueden ir como se sientan cómodas. Hay algunas que a veces, a quien invitan, a, por ejemplo, a predicar es a mi esposo, y yo le digo, yo voy a ir en pantalones. Si
Yeah.
me quieren sentar en la parte de atrás, me pueden, pero
Yeah.
yo voy a ir en pantalones,
Yeah.
porque esa es mi forma
Well,
de vestir. Y yo espero pues no afectar nada del
yeah.
culto ni de la liturgia.
I haven't worn a skirt in probably 30 years, at least 25 years, because it's not a matter of anything else other than that the older you get, the harder it is to put on all you have to put on if you're going to wear a skirt. And my shape has changed enough with a bad back that anything that is a dress and has a belt goes up one side higher than the other, and I'm not about to do that. So I mean, for most older women, pants are what you wear, and it's for modesty. Mean, I've seen too many women with a skirt on who shouldn't be sitting the way they're sitting. I mean, and the older they get, the more they do it. And I so if the question of modesty, pants are a solution for a great deal of that. And I simply can't. I'm not about to put on a skirt, unless it's a long one.
Sí, yo más o menos me pasa igual.
Yeah.
Entonces, vamos a movernos un poquito a la parte de lo de el eco. Estaba leyendo hace poco el patriarca ecuménico Bartolomé de la Iglesia Ortodoxa.
Oh, yeah.
Dice que pecar contra la creación es lo mismo que pecar contra Dios.
Well, but why is wearing a skirt against creation? I mean, the men do it all the time in a higher liturgical church. No, I can't. But a lot of some, at least in this country, some of the churches that are the most opposed to women wearing pants are the most non-liturgical.
Pero en el caso de ese comentario que hace el patriarca Bartolomé de que pecar contra la creación es lo mismo que pecar contra Dios, ¿cómo podríamos, por ejemplo, insertar eso en una liturgia en la iglesia?
Well, it depends what you mean by the order of creation. Because biblically, though God created everything good, something happened on the way to the circus. So we live in a fallen creation in which not everything is exactly the way God wanted it. So you have to figure out what is the order of creation you're talking about. The biblical passage that was the most dramatic change in my life was Genesis 3:16, the curse on women, because it is a curse. The church has no business enforcing curses. It is announcing redemption.
Se supone.
And that's to take the subordination of women to their husbands, which is what they're talking about, and saying that's the way God wants it, is denying that that is a curse. There was no subjection of Eve to Adam before sin.
Exacto.
And it says that that's the result of sin. We should not be enforcing the character of fallen creation. I mean, and when I saw that, I thought, oh my, that opens up a lot of biblical interpretation.
Sí, porque es que sí, es un pasaje que se ha utilizado precisamente para justificar que la mujer esté bajo el hombre, especialmente en las relaciones de matrimonio. Pero yo siempre le digo, pero es que ese no fue el propósito original de Dios.
No, it was not. It
Porque
was not.
entonces vamos a lo que fue el propósito original de Dios. No, ¿por qué no?
Okay, it says this is a curse. I mean, both creation stories. In Genesis 1, it's male and female, he created them. Nothing. In the second one, it's so delightful. I mean, Adam is created, and there he is trying to name all the animals, and they all come to him and gives him a name, and then but it says, but there was no one found to be a companion for him.
Compañía.
So God puts him to sleep, takes out the rib, woman's created. He wakes up and he thinks, oh
Oh,
my. This one is a companion. And I mean, it's not a subjection until you get sin, and then everything changes. But there's so much of that if you get rid of the blinders of the way you were told. But back to liturgy. I've been trying to think of how you of liturgy and ecology, and I think the best example that I know of is the change that has occurred, that well, the liturgical renovation occurred at the same time as particularly women's liberation movement in this country. The two were simultaneous in the 60s and 70s. Okay. Until then, almost every church I knew of either had the little wafers, which taste like plastic, and that's but they melt, and or else, like my church, it was white bread that you cut in little squares and served. Neither of those is really liturgical in the sense of what scripture understood, because Paul says we have all eaten from the same loaf, and so we are members of the. I mean, we have. You have to have the bread from the same loaf, which means that a lot of churches have gone to a common loaf because there's something about that. And it was for the early church. If someone was sick, you took them a piece of bread from that loaf because they were part of that loaf. I mean, it was the congregation. They made sure that every church was sort of part of the same church because they all had bread from the bishop's loaf. But that's neither here nor there at the moment. But that sense of it had to be good, nourishing bread. It had to be a common loaf. The church went to wafers in the Middle Ages because once you had transubstantiation, then you just didn't want any crumbs, because what would happen if you dropped a piece of bread and it was a crumb and a mouse got it? I mean, what do you do? I mean, it's just too terrible to imagine. So they had the wafers, which have no crumbs. Furthermore, they didn't give it to the people. They put it on your tongue. So you weren't, and that was, it was the laity who wanted it that way because they did not want to be responsible for any desecration. So here you get the wafers put on your tongue, so you have no responsibility if it falls. I mean, that's okay. They got rid of giving the cup to the people. Once you had all the Germanic tribes coming in and all the Franks and everybody coming in, they had beards. They were scared to death. You drink a cup and it drops on the floor. And again, we might spill it, might get in our beard. We don't want any of this. Please, 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 can't we just take the bread? And that was, I mean, so all of that was not a conspiracy. It was a lot of that was requested by the laity because of the fearfulness of the elements. The Reformation changed that, but they didn't change it enough.
Sí, todavía se hace así.
So I think exactly how you deal with communion is one of those things. If it is to be bread, it needs to be good, nourishing bread, but also one you can pull apart easily.
Sí, por favor.
I think the question of it was wine. You couldn't have grape juice until the 19th century without,
Fermentation.
well, you had to have vacuum seal,
Sí.
the development of vacuum seal canning. If you left the grape juice, I'm sure by the end of a month, it was going to be something other than grape juice. It was on its way to vinegar or wine. And wine was considered fine in the early church, fine in the medieval church. I mean, so I think the temperance movement changed it to grape juice. And Welch was a Methodist layman who developed canned bottled grape juice so that you could have, it was specifically created so you could have a non-fermented juice of the grape for Protestant communion services.
Oh, well, eso yo no lo
That's Welch.
sabía.
Yeah, that's Welch. That's Welch.
Qué bien.
So, and that was not until about, it was after the Civil War. And then you still had the common cups. So you had common cups, they might be passed down the aisle the way Presbyterians did or whatever, but you had common cups. So people took the cup and drank from it and passed it on. It was grape juice. Then you had, in the 1890s, you had the question of the germ theory of disease transmission. And you thought, oh no, if it's alcohol in the wine, then we're safe, more or less. But if it's grape juice that has, what do we do now? So that's when you got the little cups. The way we do communion depends on where in this pattern we fit. But our liturgy has been dominated in that fashion by either temperance or germs or whatever.
Sí, son los cambios históricos que también se ven influenciados por los cambios culturales, en los avances científicos, porque mientras la gente no supo que existían los gérmenes, no había problema. Entonces, como a veces mi nene me pregunta, pero mamá, ¿por qué te pones así? Y yo le digo, es que tú no los ves, pero yo veo los gérmenes. Donde quiera que esté, yo los veo. Y él me dice, pero ¿cómo yo? Olvídate, que ya, yo tuve que tomar clases de microbiología. O sea que todo ese mundo uno lo conoce un poco y afecta la
That's
forma
right.
en que uno se
That's right.
comporta, se
Well,
relaciona.
the pandemic. How people served communion in the pandemic is fascinating. I've talked with several Protestant pastors who said, well, what we did wasn't the way the church approves. Well, I mean, we were not in church for a year. Does that mean nobody has communion for a year? Does that mean the pastor comes around with no, might not want him. I mean, that's who knows who's got what. I mean, you just weren't. So, what do you do? Well, we did it on Zoom, and we were told it's communion, so you all got your own stuff, and then we had it on Zoom. Well, no directory for worship authorizes you doing it that way. It's supposed to be in person somehow. But we did what best we could under the circumstances.
Y ahí también vemos, por ejemplo, la diferencia en las diferentes tradiciones. Porque para mí, que dentro de los discípulos de Cristo, no fue mayor issue, porque como nosotros creemos en el sacerdocio universal y que cada quien entonces puede asumir ese rol en un caso como el de la pandemia, pues la gente como que no se sintió o culpable o muy responsable en el
No.
sentido de estoy violando cómo se hace la cosa en la iglesia, sino que cada familia participaba y de algo, un grato recuerdo que yo tengo de la pandemia es eso, como mami buscaba unas cosas, Jesús Gabriel se envolvía en otra parte de la preparación y se escogía, entonces cada quien tenía su vasito identificado, ese era el asunto de la semana. ¿Y la semana que viene, qué vamos a usar? Si mami horneaba algo, pues entonces usábamos eso que mami horneó. O si había fruta fresca, pues usábamos la fruta para hacer el jugo para la comunión. O sea que eso también se volvió algo bonito de la familia. Esa es una de las cosas que yo aprovechaba, ¿verdad? Pues quizás algo así también fue la iglesia primitiva. El cómo la gente aportaba
Well,
para
they
eso.
brought it, but it always was in the church.
In the church.
I mean, it was in the gathered community. The deacons took some of the bread to people who couldn't be there because they were in prison or they were sick or whatever. But it still was in the community. What has worried me, being sensitive to the culture is one thing. But when it's a teenage culture and they say, we want to use Coke and pizza. All right, now but how do you draw the line? How do you draw the line? If you're in the South Pacific and they have no wheat and they want to use rice crackers, okay, well, that is different. I mean, what do we do? And pineapple juice, maybe. Who knows? I mean, does that really deal with what was served at the Last Supper? But then again, we don't have lamb. So it's very hard to draw a hard and fast line. I know I don't want Coke and pizza. I can deal with grape juice. I have a hard time with rice crackers if wheat's available. I'll deal with that if I'm ever in a situation where there's no wheat available. But that's you know, there's just now the Native Americans here did not have wheat. So in Mexico, do you use corn? Well, but we're not celebrating your culture. We're celebrating the Last Supper. So how do you accommodate what connects you to that history with what connects you to your culture? And that's what I think Eliseo was doing in that little book.
Sí, no, ese, sí, Eliseo ahí en ese libro de El Bautismo a la Chilaquile, él trae esos elementos de cómo se
That's
hacía
right, but he's
antes.
not about to put the baby in oil.
No,
It's going to be
no,
water.
sí, pero.
And I think ecology comes into the issue of water because baptism is with water, and it should be clean water.
Sí.
And I think it means that people who are part of a new creation because they have gone through clean water ought to work for clean water. I mean, that's, you know, there's something about it. And the difference, I still find it fascinating, the difference between the two sacraments or the two ordinances or whatever we call them, those two things. Water, we use water in baptism. And it's just as God gave it to us. But we use bread and wine or grape juice in communion. And it's not at all the way God gave it to us.
No.
God gave us wheat and God gave us grapes. And we've done all and said, go at it. And we did. So what we present to God is the work of our hands and not just ours, of the whole culture that has created bread in whatever forms, but has created bread. And the whole culture that managed to deal with creating wine out of grape juice, which has a long history of cultivation. We present back to God at communion what the work of our hands, of human hands, the transformation of the elements God has given us into something that is of great cultural significance.
Y es nueva creación también.
And at that point, God takes it and does something to it. I'm sure it's not transubstantiation, but I'm sure it's not just, oh, thank you. God takes it, and in communion, something is done with that bread so it becomes the reality of Christ for us. And what's in creation, we then give to God, the work of human culture, and God takes it and gives it back as something even newer.
Sí, y por ejemplo, para mí que también cultivo y trabajo la
That's right.
tierra, ese trabajo que
Well,
hay
culture and culture and cultivate
sí, y entonces,
and cult.
como yo digo a veces, yo cosecho ingredientes y se
Yeah.
los llevo a mi mamá y mi mamá los transforma en
That's right.
comida.
That's
Entonces,
right. Exactly.
ver esos procesos también, por lo menos a mí, me ayudan también a acercarme más a Dios y a las demás personas.
Yeah.
Y quizás en la época en que estamos viviendo, que mucha pe gente piensa que la comida es lo que encuentro en el supermercado o en el
Yeah.
farmers market, porque perdieron esa relación entre cómo se produce la
Yeah.
comida y el producto final que obtengo.
Yeah.
A veces ni siquiera, a veces la gente ya a veces no van a comprar los ingredientes, compran ya la
Well,
comida preparada.
and women have traditionally been responsible for feeding. Okay. Men have been responsible for getting them the food in some fashion. But I was struck enormously. I had no experience of being in Latin America until we were married, and Houston and I were married. We were all over everywhere, but one of the places we were the longest that first summer was Costa Rica. Okay, and his parents had lived in Costa Rica. The enormous difference between the situation in Costa Rica and the situation that I was accustomed to. A school teacher there, a woman who was a school teacher, who was married, had children. She could not possibly take care of the house, including cooking, and teach, because the level of her salary would not allow her to buy the things that were convenience. She could have canned food was generally exorbitant. We went to, I was interested in this. We went to a place that sold washing machines, clothes washing machines, not very modern ones, but washing machines. It would take more than a month's salary for her to buy a washing machine. It would take about the same, if not more, to buy a refrigerator, which meant that she would have to go to a market and buy food every day and cook it and not be able to save it in the refrigerator. She would have to wash clothes. That was not possible. But there were women who were the level below that economically, and she could pay them, and they could go to the market, and they could cook, and other women could take the laundry. And that was cheaper than buying the machines that I was accustomed to. And I remember Husso going to a school, it was a missionary training place, the language school, and they asked him to come over and speak to the American missionaries. One of them was saying the thing she could not deal with was having servants. Now here, now you're dealing with what I grew up with. The thought that you had a servant was not possible. You did not have a maid. I mean, you might be very wealthy, but that was out of the reach of everybody I knew. You might, if you had good reason to, that is, you were older or infirm or something, you might have a cleaning woman. Now, she would come in every 2 weeks or so. But a maid, no. A maid was a servant. You did not have servants. There was a strong emphasis on, we don't have that sort of thing. We do our own work. As long as possible, we do our own work. We do not have servants. You might have a lawn company, but that's a different, you don't have a gardener. You have a lawn company. You don't have a maid, you have a cleaning woman, maybe, but that's a layer up. But in order to teach full time and have children, something had to give. What gave was the cooking. And so that's where you began. All of this convenience of a cake mix, of maybe we go to McDonald's. I mean, a great deal of the whole problem with the food industry is the question of convenience. I don't have time to cook, so we'll go to McDonald's. I don't have time to cook, so we'll grab something here.
TV diner, esto que venía la comida ya congelada,
Yeah, that's
completa,
right. That's right. That's right.
el microondas.
Yeah, that's right. But it's it that whole system which has deteriorated the health. It's based on that sense of, in a family, a wife is going to work full time, and a husband is not going to stay home and cook. Then it's the food industry that's going to take the brunt of what's got to give. That and cheap clothing, and things that are synthetic enough that they can wash and not have to be ironed. I mean, the whole not no iron. I mean, that's because you have nobody home who can do all of that. And you try to put women back in that, and it doesn't work.
No.
But if we figure out a system, it's going to have to be a system that lets us use real food, do it well. But we haven't figured out how to do that. Somebody's got to stay home and do the cooking. The laundry we pretty much figured out. But it's things like that until you see a society where a normal middle class salary will not allow you to buy a refrigerator, a car, a washing machine, and you realize, okay, who is doing those things? The car, we can deal with that, public transportation, okay. But the food and the laundry are going to be done by a group that is glad to get the salary, and they get the leftovers. There's no refrigerator. They can take that home, or it goes to the neighbors, but there's no leftover. Every day you start out at the market.
A buscar el trabajo de los agricultores de la zona
Well,
o de lo
somebody, I know it's the markets. You go to the big public markets. You don't go to a grocery store. That's food that is already processed. You go to the market, but somebody's got to go every day if you're going to eat every day, And they have to go early in the morning and come back with what's to be eaten that day. Eggs probably can stay out, but the milk is going to be delivered in the morning and it's going to be raw and you're going to boil
Sí.
it.
Dependiendo de lo que se vaya a hacer, sí, se
Yeah,
usaba.
I mean, it was a, but I remember going into stores just to price the things and to go into a grocery store and realize, you know, this made no sense. Almost all of the crayons were imported. It was beyond, it would make no sense for someone to buy most of the things that were in cans or in packages. I think there's a lot to do with ecology on the question of food, but it can't be that everyone has to stay home and start from scratch every day. Freezers are wonderful, but something has to give, and what's given is food more than anything. That's what's given. And what's come in to replace it has not been good for us.
Si retomamos ese aspecto que comentabas al principio de que tenía que ser un pan bueno y nutritivo,
That's right.
¿qué es, le estamos dando a nuestra gente? No solamente en el diario vivir, en el momento sagrado de especial que compartimos como iglesia, o
Iglesia.
sea, ¿qué le estamos dando? ¿Es nutritivo? Porque a mí me ha pasado en ocasiones a veces que participo y oro, Señor, que no me dé picor, porque yo sé que ese pan tiene mucho gluten y me va. Entonces, o personas que son alérgicas
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
a en realidad, o sea, no solamente es el aspecto simbólico de lo espiritual, sino también el simbólico de lo físico
Yeah.
que recibimos, que nos haga bien al cuerpo y al alma. Eso a veces no lo vemos o no lo integramos en nuestras liturgias, nos quedamos solamente en el aspecto espiritual y en lo allá, y no podemos verlo, esa encarnación, como si
That's right.
pudiéramos
Yeah.
decirlo, de lo que significan esos elementos. Así que ese aspecto de que mencionabas de cómo Dios nos dio el trigo, las uvas, y con nuestro trabajo lo transformamos en algo que se lo presentamos a Dios y Dios vuelve y lo transforma en
That's
ese
right, yeah.
momento. O sea, que gracias por eso, porque nos permite entonces seguir reflexionando y profundizando en esto y otros temas que, pues, de liturgia se puede hablar muchos aspectos, porque están las oraciones, los himnos,
Yeah.
y si es una actividad que hay bautismo, pues son otros asuntos. Pero el bautismo para el asunto del agua y el aspecto de la comunión, que yo creo que son aspectos que son universales, no importa dónde uno esté, la denominación o en qué parte del planeta, son aspectos que de las iglesias cristianas tenemos. Así que gracias por acompañarnos en este ratito de reflexión. No sé si quieres tener algunas palabras finales para despedirnos.
I think having more women in leadership roles within the church is changing things. But I think, and especially if they are women who have to deal with family life and begin to make the trend, see the similarities between their work in the church and their work at home, and help the church see, okay, what are our church dinners to be like? Or if we run a food pantry, what should we specialize in? I think. Or if people lack the ability to have clean clothes, what can we do? But I've been particularly interested in the food. I started out in home economics in college, but in dietetics, and I didn't last long. But it's been there.
Sí. No, y yo creo que es como que algo que nos sale también relacionar mucho las cosas con la comida. Mi mamá es una que dice que un pueblo con hambre no piensa.
That's right.
Así que, o sea, es aspecto físico, emocional, espiritual, mental, que está todo relacionado con algo tan sencillo como el pan. Gracias,
Oh,
gracias,
you are quite
Catherine,
welcome.
por acompañarnos hoy. Y nos vemos en otro próximo episodio de Ecoteo Fem. Dios les bendiga. Mientras comían, Jesús tomó el pan y lo bendijo. Luego lo partió y se lo dio a sus discípulos y les dijo: Tomen, coman, esto es mi cuerpo. Después tomó la copa y luego de dar gracias, la entregó a sus discípulos y les dijo: Beban de ella todos, porque esto es mi sangre del nuevo pacto, que es derramada por muchos para perdón de los pecados. Yo les digo que Desde ahora no volveré a beber de este fruto de la vid hasta el día en que beba con ustedes el vino nuevo en el reino de mi Padre. Este es uno de los textos que utilizamos comúnmente para el acto de la cena. Lo encontramos en Mateo, capítulo 26, de los versos 26 al 29. En esta es la traducción Reina Valera Contemporánea. También quiero que recordemos uno de los textos que la iglesia primitiva acostumbraba a utilizar al momento de los bautismos, y es ese texto en Gálatas 3, 25 al 29, que tantas veces lo utilizamos fuera del contexto porque no lo relacionamos con que era un texto del bautismo, que pertenece al contexto de los bautismos. Y lo recuerdo, dice, pero al venir la fe, no estamos ya al cuidado de un tutor, pues todos ustedes son hijos de Dios por la fe en Cristo Jesús, porque todos ustedes, los que han sido bautizados en Cristo, están revestidos de Cristo. Y por ese bautismo, ya no hay judío ni griego, no hay esclavo ni libre, no hay varón ni mujer, sino que todos ustedes son uno en Cristo Jesús. Y si ustedes son de Cristo, ciertamente son un linaje de Abraham y, según la promesa, herederos. Eso está en Gálatas 3, del 25 al 29, también en la traducción Reina Valera Contemporánea. Y después de este banquete que hemos tenido junto a la profesora Catherine González González, quiero compartir con ustedes algunas notitas para que podamos entonces aterrizarlo también en el aspecto ecoteológico o ecofeminista, lo que hemos estado hablando. Quiero compartir con ustedes algunas estrategias ecoteológicas y ecofeministas que podemos añadir entonces a nuestra liturgia. Estas son fortalecer la ecoespiritualidad, procesos de duelo y esperanza y colección de oraciones. El teólogo suizo y especialista en ética Christoph Stockelberger, en un artículo sobre estrategias ecoteológicas, nos hace tres recomendaciones, que son estas que les mencioné ya, sobre liturgia y espiritualidad, que es lo que quiero compartir en este momentito con ustedes. La primera, fortalecer la ecoespiritualidad, significa develar o desenmascarar la energía que proviene de las visiones bíblicas del reino de Dios y de la vida. Se puede lograr al experimentar eso alternativo que es posible, como respirar aire limpio, beber agua limpia o disfrutar del cielo nocturno sin contaminación lumínica. También el segundo, permitir procesos de duelo y esperanza. En estos tiempos tan distópicos y surreales, donde el consumo exagerado nos quiere ahogar, podemos entrar en un proceso de duelo y esperanza, al reconocer que podemos vivir bien con menos. Celebrar la esperanza de un nuevo estilo de vida que nos libera de las garras del modelo económico de sobreconsumo y explotación de todo cuanto existe. Y por último, esa colección de oraciones. Las iglesias deben permitir y ayudar a sus feligreses a reformular nuestras oraciones a Dios. En estas súplicas podemos expresar nuestro llanto, nuestro dolor, nuestras alegrías y motivos de agradecimiento. También, más que pedir por la lluvia o porque se aplaque el calor, debemos comenzar a orar también por sabiduría, por acceso a información confiable y por valentía para actuar en favor de la justicia climática. En esa última recomendación, la de colección de oraciones, Gloria y Ross Kinsler, en el libro sobre el jubileo bíblico que escribieron, que se llama El jubileo bíblico y la lucha por la vida. Gloria y Ross nos hacen una serie también de recomendaciones y nos recuerdan que quizás necesitamos crear nuevas oraciones de confesión en las que compartamos nuestro comportamiento social y económico, donde reformulemos nuestros compromisos ideológicos y acordemos sujetarnos mutuamente a estos compromisos. También nos recuerdan que debemos ayudarnos unos a otras y a resistir estas presiones, siempre presentes del consumo desmedido sobre nuestras vidas y las de nuestras familias. Esto requiere una nueva comprensión de la espiritualidad más de acuerdo con el llamado a ser un pueblo diferente, alternativo de Dios. Me pregunto, ¿por qué gastamos tanto dinero en elementos desechables cuando celebramos la Cena del Señor o la Eucaristía o la Santa Cena? ¿Por qué no invitamos a las personas que les gusta cocinar a que horneen y compartan sus recetas de pan favorita? ¿Por qué cada vez nuestras liturgias se alejan de las cosas creadas por Dios, como el agua, las frutas, las montañas o las playas? Por eso quiero cerrar con la invitación que nos hace Gary Paul Nabhan en su libro Jesus for Farmers and Fishers: Justice for All Those Marginalized by Our Food System. Jesús para los agricultores y pescadores. Justicia para aquellas personas marginalizadas por nuestro sistema de comida. Nabhan, cuando habla sobre la comunión o la Santa Cena, la presenta como algo parecido a lo que conversamos con Catherine González. Pensemos en una tríada dinámica de pan, vino y pescado. Aquí Nabhan añade el elemento del pescado, que pueden convertirse en un nuevo tipo de trinidad. Una trinidad que junte lo terroso del pan, el fermento celestial de las uvas y lo aceitoso de las criaturas marinas en un sacramento en movimiento que cambie ante nuestros ojos. De esta forma podemos recordar que nuestro Creador ha amado tanto a este mundo que nos ofrece una comunión completa con cada criatura y cultura de la tierra, el aire o lo que flote entre los mares. Jesús rompió con las leyes de exclusión y pureza que separaban a los fariseos y escribas de las agricultoras, los pescadores y demás personas que supuestamente son impuras o eran impuras. Por eso te invito a que te compartas con la comunidad de Ecoteofem alguna oración, canción o lectura con enfoque ecoteológico o ecofeminista. Así vamos a poder construir nuevas comunidades alternativas litúrgicas para nuestros tiempos. Espero que hayan disfrutado de esta nuestra primera entrevista en Ecoteofem y que podamos reflexionar sobre eso que tomamos ya tan en automático muchas veces, que tiene que ver con nuestros momentos en el bautismo y la celebración de la Cena del Señor. Nos vemos en el próximo episodio. Dios les bendiga. Ecoteofem. Escucha, comenta, comparte, suscríbete.